Thank you, Patrick. It's an honor and a privilege to be here at Tuckahoe.
Now he's going to be on. I'm going to turn you on. I'm going to move, unmute you now. Do you want to go forward a little bit, or you'd like it back here? It's up to you. There you go.
I'm good. All right. It's an honor and a privilege to be here, and I thank you so much for your invitation to talk about this subject, which I believe is the greatest spiritual, moral, and ethical issue in the United States of America. On August 11th, Sunday, the Washington Post put out a six-page article on the lives we have lost. And before you leave today, how many of you take the Washington Post? Not very many. All right, well, I guess you take the Richmond Times-Dispatch, is it?
Times-Dispatch. Jim, may I interrupt? By tonight, by midnight, the Washington Post offers $40 a year on the internet, full year subscription. But we've got the special ends tonight. So go to Washington Post for $40. You got it.
Okay. Thank you, sir. What caught my attention, and I put it together, actually my wife put it together, this description here, and before you leave, just walk by here and take a look at this. On the picture side, pictures which are just about this big, are the 423 gun victims since Sandy Hook Elementary School, when those 20 children died up in Connecticut. 20 kids, first grade. They were followed by 401 other survivors in mass killings in the United States. Mass killings. And in the print, going back to 1966, which was the first mass shooting in the United States at the University of Texas, since 1966, 1,196 people have been killed by mass shootings, defined as four or more deaths. Now, each of these people are a statistic in the United States. One of our horrible statistics. But there are other people who are affected by their death. Each one of these people had a mother, father, sister, brother, uncle, aunt, grandmother, grandfather, Sunday school teacher, band instructor, football coach, participant in a reading class for handicapped people. All over the country, these statistics mushroom, and nobody keeps the statistics of those people who mourn the deaths of these individuals. No statistics are there. But they are here in the United States of America. Profoundly here. Now, we don't seem to be ready to do anything about it. Although our president is waffling on the subject, he says he wants to do something meaningful about it. But he always manages to get on the phone to Wayne Lapierre. And whenever he does, he changes his mind about doing something about having universal background checks for all guns sold, or banning assault weapons, which are weapons of war, or taking away huge magazines, which can hold from 30 to 100 bullets, and shoot 100 bullets in 40 seconds, and even fire them through the walls. That's just a little bit of our problem with gun violence in the United States. Now, what I have before you is a citizen's test on gun violence. Everybody's going to pass. No, castigating anybody if you're going to know the right answer. And soon we are going to pass out the answers.
We already did, Jim.
You already did. Okay, you got those. All right. All right, let's go through these questions first and then have a discussion. I'm not going to be lecturing you tonight. The PCUSA, of which Tuckahoe is a part, other faith communities, the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, the Brady Campaign, gun violence prevention groups throughout the country are opposed to hunting, target shooting, and are determined to ban all guns used in self-defense. True or false?
False.
False. Absolutely false. Since 1968, more Americans have died by gunfire within our own country than all servicemen and women killed in battle in all U.S. wars since 1775. True or false? I didn't hear a firm answer. It's true. Can you imagine that?
Is that just Americans or everybody?
These are United States servicemen and women. No, you're not talking about French or Germans or Italians or anybody else. Just Americans. Just like there are Americans killed on our streets and in our homes, in our churches, in our movie theaters, in our bars, et cetera, et cetera. First time I remember putting that statistic out for the first book I wrote, the editor called back and said, there's got to be some mistake. You were wrong on this. And I said, I am not wrong on that. And I called his attention to it's in America and its guns in the back, the appendix, which lists deaths year by year by year. And the United States Defense Department concurs that more people are lost by gun violence in the United States than are lost in all of our wars, battlefields. Just an example. In the 7.5 years of war in Iraq, we lost 4,500 servicemen and women. In the same period of time, we lost 220,500 Americans on our own streets and in our own homes by guns. Now, while we're talking about these guns and this awful description of these deaths, these are all mass killings. and we get excited and angry and upset about these mass killings in America that take four or more people, take the lives of four or more people. But this is a drop in the bucket of the gun deaths in America. How many, do you know how many, what percent of the gun deaths in the United States occur by mass killing? Anybody?
5.5%.
2%. 2% of the deaths in the United States by guns occur by mass killing. The rest? Biggest is suicide and murders and acts of violence in our communities. Number three, the annual overall cost of firearm violence for the U.S. economy is
$229 billion.
Who says $229 billion? Who says other examples? Other answers. He's right. The preacher's right. $229 billion. Now, what is the biggest expenditure on that list? Do you know? Well, funerals are part of it, right? What?
Medical.
That's a huge, huge expense. How many of you have seen the documentary Trigger? You ought to put that on your list. It's a documentary presented by the Presbyterian Disaster Association. And now it's on Amazon Prime. I was with David Barnhart, who's the super photojournalist, and we went to the Washington MedStar Hospital and spent a day with paraplegics who had been injured and living in wheelchairs, age 20 through 50. We spent a day with them. The people, the caregivers told us that each of those persons who were paraplegics, the cost for their upkeep is $1 million a year. And goes on and on and on. But instead of that, in spite of that, medical expenses are not the biggest. Loss of productivity, that's certainly in there.
Incarceration.
We'll come to that in a minute. But before we get into incarceration, let's talk about security. Security is a huge expense in America. How many of you go to a bank and find a guard? How many of you go to school and find a guard? 10 years ago, you didn't have that. Or you didn't have much of it. You find guards in hospitals. You find guards in parking lots. You find guards whenever you go to an athletic event, at the Coliseum in Richmond. You find guards everywhere, even in my retirement community in Harrisonburg, Virginia, we've got guards. And a lot of churches are hiring guards. That adds up, you know. And security concerns are making mint by selling burglar arms.
So security is a huge item for expense. But someone mentioned incarceration and the criminal justice system. That's where the bulk of our dollars go for gun violence prevention. In 1977, one in 77 people, one in 77 were involved in some way with the criminal justice system. Today, that figure is one in 31. One in 31 Americans are involved with the criminal justice system, with court procedures, with jails, for-profit prisons. The United States has more people in prison than China. Today, 15 years after 9/11, it's now impossible for those on the FBI's no-fly list to legally buy guns and explosives. True or false? Come on, buy all you want. You can't fly, but you can get a gun. Yeah, have one. They'll protect you. They'll keep you safe. Well, they're both. Each year, how many people are killed in the United States by guns? The highest on that list is 32,000, but last year it was almost 40,000. Not quite 40,000. The most frequently used murder weapon is what? A handgun. Not an assault rifle, as deadly as they are, but a handgun. And why do people buy handguns? To protect themselves. Now, I often meet people who say, it was awful that so many people were killed. Awful. But if it hadn't been the gun, why? What did they tell you? Let me tell you that somebody would get a knife. Or somebody would get a
hammer
or a baseball bat and kill you with that. Stats don't lie. A lot of people who use them do. But the most efficient, constant instrument of death in the United States is a handgun. America, in what part of the country owns the most firearms?
South.
No consistency. What? Who said Northeast? Why did you say Northeast?
More people.
More people? Who said the Midwest? Chicago area. Who said the West? Who said the South?
I was thinking
Texas. Majority of you said South. And you're right.
Wow. Why is that?
The Bible Belt. What are you talking about? The Bible Belt, where we believe in God, you know. Yeah. We'll get to this. Why is that? the highest homicide rates per 100,000 population are where? Where are the highest murder rates? In what part of the country? In the South. Remember Willie Sutton? Bank robber? Yeah. Why do you rob banks?
Get money.
In the South, where are the most deaths?
Where the guns are.
And in this book over here, we have some charts which show the most dangerous and the safest states. For 100,000 population, the most dangerous state for gun violence and where they have the most guns is Alaska, and then Louisiana and other southern communities, which have grown up believing that's where we have the statistics just prove that's what happens. Number 9, Americans are more likely to be murdered or assaulted by friend, acquaintance, or family member. A person with a criminal record, a person of another race or religion. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Huh? You think it makes sense? I don't. I don't think it makes sense.
They make you madder than anybody else.
True.
We have to taught people that that if you have a disagreement with someone, you don't take a gun out and shoot them. They just shot a waitress because she was late getting the food to them and didn't even tell her that they were mad at her.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got to learn not to take your anger out with a gun or go to a range and then do it. But that's what a lot of this is. People are mad and they're going to shoot someone. They're not. They don't know how to end a discussion.
True.
Or, you know, anger.
True.
Why is everybody so mad now?
What's that?
Why is everybody so mad now? It seems like it's just getting crazy lately.
It's been getting crazy since 1966 in terms of the mass shootings. And, you know, I mean, we look back and say we don't want America to turn into the Wild West.
It is.
But if you read about what the Wild West did, I would rejoice if we had the same laws as Dodge City. If we had the same laws as Abilene, Kansas, where when people came to that city, they had to go to the sheriff's office and check their guns in, and then they could go to the saloon. Not before. Today, hey, I want you to think something. If it's true, and it is true that the most dangerous person for you is a friend, an acquaintance, a person that lives on your block and looks just like you and lives in your neighborhood. If gun dealers put that sign on their doors, do you think they could sell many guns? That most person, that the person most likely to do you harm is a member of your own household. Imagine that. They wouldn't sell it. They wouldn't put those signs up. But who are we afraid of? Not people who are like us. We're afraid of people who look the opposite of us, or who think the opposite of us. We're afraid, who are our boogie people today? The Muslims, the Hispanics, which Trump called animals infesting our country. They're the people we're afraid of. But the people who die are people just like us in our own homes. Let's get to number 10. The Second Amendment guarantees law-abiding American citizens the right to own any type of firearm with no restrictions.
False.
False. There's a long comment in your answer sheet, your source sheet, by Justice Scalia. I encourage you to read it, which says that, you know, that we are a nation under with laws, and the Second Amendment also is governed by laws and restrictions. A gun kept in the home for self-defense is how many times more likely to be used in a murder, accidental shooting, suicide, or be stolen and used in a crime in the stopping truth?
22.
Now, recent polls indicate more than what percentage of all gun owners and NRA members support background checks on all guns sold?
80%.
It is 94%. 94%. And these are NRA members, and if you want to do some homework on that, look up the name Frank Luntz, W-N-T-Z, who's a Republican pollster and has written extensively on that. The Consumer Product Safety Commission is prohibited by law from examining the safety of any gun or any piece of ammunition.
True.
You know, in my travels, I never traveled without my rabbit. I got a rabbit. And our legislators have considered this rabbit dangerous for small children. They have inaugurated 4 sets of laws to protect our tiniest, most vulnerable kids from this rabbit. Toxicity of the material. Rough edges, and you know, whiskers to scratch. Loose parts, don't want those eyes to come off and have them swallow them. Flammability. But the Consumer Department cannot examine the safety of this or any gun. Toy guns, yes, but not real guns. Majority of gun owners do not lock up their firearms in the home.
True.
Actually, it's 40-some percent of gun owners do not lock up their firearms. Now, there were 60% of crime guns come from what percentage of legal guns? Five percent of legal gun dealers distribute 60% of our crime guns. How is that possible?
Black market.
One is black market. Another is straw purchases. You know straw purchases?
No.
Straw purchase is a purchase conducted by the name that I forgot. Your name?
John.
If I have a record and my name is on the instant background check and I want a gun for whatever reason, I can't get one from a legal dealer. But I know John. John has a good record. And I said, John, you want to make $100? He said, sure. So we go to the gun shop, and I say to John, I want that gun right there. And John buys it for me. That's a straw purchase. And there are tons straw purchases through legal gun dealers today. Also, the gun dealers themselves have been given the right to hire most anybody, even felons, and sell guns over the counter and often pass them out the back door of legal gun shops. Today, we know that this has been occurring for a long time, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms has asked that gun dealers have a inventory once a year. And the Congress voted that down. So they can't keep record of where those guns are. Let's jump to 18. Many persons who carry guns to town hall meetings, presidential speeches, and other political events believe they have a constitutional right to take violent action against our government should it become tyrannical. True or false?
True.
Now, who are these people? Who are these people? These are not your average gun owner people. Your average gun owner agrees with the statements that the Presbyterian Church USA made since 1966. But the people who think it's good to take that gun and show it and masquerade around with it are your extremists. I call them gunmentalists. And that's what my book, Gunmentalism, is about. These are extremists. And they have a religious and an ideological framework
carry out their beliefs. And the belief is, our Constitution says we have God-given gun rights. You ever heard that? God-given gun rights. Where did that come from? It didn't come from the Constitution. It didn't come from the Bible. It came from these extremists who think that God wants them armed. And we're having that quote-unquote debate today about it again. And we are held hostage by no more than 5 million gun extremists in this country who get their money from the gun lobby and and they share that with the elected leaders in our legislative arenas. 33 states have stand your ground laws, which gives one the right to use a gun against another without retreating if they feel threatened. How many deaths have taken place because somebody felt threatened and they took out their gun and shot someone? The last question. When New York City police officers fire their guns in shootouts with criminals or public offenders, they hit their targets, what percent of the time? 18% of the time. When they fire at subjects that do not shoot back at them, they hit their targets 30%. Now, that's not great. That's not great. Remember these, this was, take a look at your source there, where the police commissioner in New York City found that in the years 1998 to 2006, he studied their hit ratio. And this was unearthed because of an incident that occurred at New York City near the Empire State Building, where the cops shot at some offenders and wounded 9 people. So I always like to ask, how would a second grade teacher armed with a 45 stop somebody in her classroom who wants to shoot things up? Now, this is a sort of old once over lightly for all kinds of things regarding gun violence. This is a huge subject. As I state in some of my books, that the greatest frustration I have is often being asked to go to a church and have a potluck supper. And then we'll have a potluck supper from 6 to 6:30, 6:45. And then from 6:45 to 7:30, we'll have questions and answers about guns. And, as if we can deal with the subject then. I always feel like I say, sure, I'll be glad to come and lead that. Next week, I'll come back and talk about God, humanity, and the Milky Way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge subject. I went to a university in Kansas, and sociology class, and the professor introduced me by saying to his class, if you wanted to thoroughly study gun violence and its effect on America, what academic subjects would you have to discuss? And those kids filled up an entire whiteboard. Sociology, law, African-American studies, religion,
statistics,
psychiatry, psychology, history. I mean, it is replete. It goes from A to Z. It's a big subject, and I am so glad that you all have the courage to look at this thing holistically, that you have the courage to meet together and talk together about what are major issues in this country. Thank you for being here, and thank you for your interest and your study. Yeah.
Q&A, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
What did the Presbyterian Church say in 1966?
That in 1966, that guns should be controlled, that they shouldn't be just laissez-faire. We should have regulations on them.
And we've affirmed that every GA since?
Yes, we have. Yeah, I was a missionary in Japan for 9 years. And when I got there, I was told that they had good pheasant hunting and good duck hunting, so I took my shotgun. And I went to the customs official, and I declared that I had a shotgun, and he said, I'm sorry, you cannot bring your gun. And he said, I will have to call the Yokohama police, and they'll come and get it, and they'll send it down to Kobe, where you're going to be living for the next couple of years, and the Kobe police will get in touch with you and tell you how to get your gun back. And so soon they called, said, can we come and see you about your guns? Sure. So they wanted to know if they wanted me to identify the gun and open it to see if I could handle it. And then they said, now if you want to get your gun back, you have to do 3 things. You have to go to a doctor and get a statement from him that you're mentally and physically able to handle this thing. And then you have to take a hunting safety course. And then you have to buy 2 licenses. And then we'll give you your, bring them to the police department, we'll give you your contact. I would really take off. I bought my gun out of Sears Roebuck catalog. Just like that. But then I began to realize that these very minimal procedures kept Japan safe. And in the year we left Tokyo, which was then the largest city in the world, there was 1 death by guns. 1. I came back to the United States, 35,000 died. Any other questions?
Yeah, Jim, have a question.
So back
recently, someone informed me that you could go online and buy what's called an 80% gun, and it's an AR-15 rifle that's 80% assembled, 20% is not assembled, but all the parts are there, and that you can then therefore get it, you can purchase it, you don't have to have a background check, you don't have no waiting period. You can assemble that said rifle, and then you have a fully working, semi-automatic rifle.
He also told me that somebody who did this, he purchased it, and he misdrilled some of the plates, so what he thought he made a semi-automatic was actually a fully automatic AR-15. So my question is, you know, the ways in which people can purchase weapons are become, with the internet and every, I mean, like everything else, it's almost, it seems like there's, it's too complex to even legislate anything, because there's so many ways you can work around the system.
Yeah.
And I just kind of want to get your input on, you know, is it a matter of just crafting legislation in such a way that it's so clear, or are there other measures that, you know, online purchasing ability, or what is the most effective way of doing this? I mean, I understand like AR-15s are not the most common cause of gun violence, but the fact that you can do that and work around it like that is very troubling. It could happen with a Glock that's 8% simple. Could you speak to that?
Well, this is the arena where the NRA is most comfortable. You ever seen the bumper sticker, the shoe obfuscation? Well, they love obfuscation. And what they can do is say, now these guns are not any different from your average shotgun, or your average semi-automatic gun that a person, good American, would use for hunting. Are you going to punish him for having that gun? Are you going to say that is the same? The same type of operation that is existent in a normal shotgun. Are you going to say that's verboten in the United States of America? And here we're back again arguing about these tiny laws. Which perpetuate the killing, and only that. I mean, do you know of any law, any concern of the American people that has 94% support, and they can't do anything? You know, I don't. But it's going to take a real. We have to stand up and speak up, and we have to study up and know what we're talking about when we go to our legislators and say, you know, we will not stand. And that's what's happening now. I mean, there's a huge movement taking place. We are having all kinds of organizations formed. We're having young people getting all excited and appearing before courts, and we're having states take on laws themselves. If the federal government won't do it, the states will. Some states have. We've heard a lot about red flag laws. Anybody know what a red flag law is? A red flag law is a law which 17 states have adopted, and the District of Columbia, where a family and or a court can say to the police, our son, our neighbor, our loved one is really having problems, and he has a lot of guns. Please take those guns. That is a red flag law, and that is, and that has saved dozens of lives since that came into effect. Another law that came into effect was in Connecticut and Maryland. where the buyer, where the person who was buying the gun had to give a fingerprint and a photograph before they could take the gun home. That was in Connecticut and Maryland. When they did that, their gun death rate dropped 40%.
40%.
At the same time, Kansas, which previously had that same law of a fingerprint and photograph, they repealed that in Kansas, and their death rate went up 25%. Yes, ma'am?
Has there been any study done with the violence that we're seeing out in the streets with the young people and video games?
In my book on America and its guns, I mentioned video games as violence light. And they are really, really dangerous. Because they teach people to use guns to kill. It's an awful thing. Yes?
What's the reason for the Second Amendment?
Well, one, what's the reason for the Second Amendment? Law agencies need force. Lawful police units need force and be able to use that force. That's half of it. The other half is, which gets lost, is that the society needs safety, and that those firearms which law enforcement and people need for defense also have a right to know that they will be well regulated.
So it's mainly to have law enforcement have guns?
And individuals.
Okay.
And individuals. But we also, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the right of people to keep their arms shall not be infringed. But what we have a well-regulated militia. We have a very poorly regulated. That's our problem. But it's coming. We're going to have it. Yes, ma'am.
My husband lives in my do not always agree. Asked a few minutes ago, why is everyone so angry? And I think that's, in my opinion, that's part of what my friend and I talked about at breakfast this morning that makes us despair. Because seems to be a prevailing sense of, I don't know if entitlement is the right word, but if a professor gives you a bad grade, you can kill him. If someone has fired you 3, 5, 10 years ago, go kill him. Take out anybody else that's in the office. If a doctor makes a mistake or doesn't make a mistake, if someone in your family dies, go in and blow him in the whole emergency room away. That mentality, to me, is the danger. That's the danger. It's not just guns. You can run them down with a car. You can stab them. You can poison them. But the mentality is if there's any perceived slight against you, you are entitled to retaliate 100-fold.
Mm-hmm.
in proportion to the slight by taking that person's life along with anybody that happens to be close to them. And I think, I don't have an answer, but that's what Sherry and I decided makes us despair, is there is a mentality that did not exist decades ago that I think is causing a lot of what we're seeing, is if you're angry with somebody, you just kill them.
The value of human life has increased.
And respect and accepting of personal responsibility. I mean, I failed the class, but he gave me the F and I didn't get the job, so he deserves to die. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
It's bigger than what you use to kill him with.
That's why you come to worship here in just a moment and hear the gospel of love. To hear the gospel of caring for neighbor. To hear the word of be kind to one another. Receive the immigrant. Love those who persecute you. I mean, it's that's what we're here for. That's what we're here for. And evidently you guys are doing a good job of preaching the gospel. Yes, sir.
Truck in front of me this morning had on the back of it, my other auto is a 9mm.
Yeah.
Wow. I had to stay far from you.
Wow.
Couldn't hear that.
Wow.
Yeah, here. Say it again. Just for that right here.
The truck behind me had a sign on the back saying, my other auto is a 9mm.
You don't want to mess with it. Civil discussion is not part of
it. Not a new sign,
it was an old one.
Yeah.
Hello?
That was good. I gave it a 6.
Yeah. Theological, it seems like there's a theological disconnect between the BCUSA's position and what we might hear from Jesus if he was sitting at the table about the whole nature of guns. I just wondered if you could speak to that.
The disconnect between what PCUSA says?
Yeah, the fact that...
And what Jesus said.
And what Jesus might say about the nature of that instrument that we created. We created an instrument that shoots a projectile and destroys something away from you.
So you're saying we have not been strong enough in what we've said. In terms of if we want to follow Jesus.
Well, I guess I'm not. I didn't go to seminary, so I would
you
say.
You don't need to go to seminary.
But I would say, is there a position? Does that make sense? Like, if Jesus may say, "Well, why even have this instrument? It's not a good. It's an instrument that is mostly used for violence and more violent for ends." So maybe the PCUSA is doing something half-heartedly or trying to ameliorate a certain percentage of its...
They don't want to lose members, that's one thing, but I take the point, and I agree with a lot of what you say. I remember a little phrase one time that in the name of a cautious statistical Christ, you know, and that's what we've often done. And we're very careful. We're very careful. When I was a preacher, and first brought this up, I lost some members. You're not talking the gospel, you're talking politics.
Aren't they the same?
And when
aren't they the same?
Well, sometimes they are, and sometimes they're widely divergent. But I confess. Sunday, I went back to my church from which I retired in Arlington and confessed that that I regret that I kept my mouth shut too long. And I think if there's any hope that we have of getting a more sane and safe society, it will be because the church is the church, and it recognizes who its leader is, the nonviolent Jesus.
Okay, I think we're going to call it there. Books up there for sale. Sarah will help facilitate other creative means of payment. And then Jim's will be standing by his book so we can answer more questions. Jim, I want to thank you again. Thank you so much.